Council meeting, City of Aurora Grande for Tuesday, June the 10th. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Costello.
Here.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Council Board Member Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Fellows is absent tonight. And Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Here. Before we get started, just a quick announcement. The council is also meeting this evening as the redevelopment agency. And one quick announcement. The council was also in closed session before this meeting started. We were discussing labor issues, and we have no report at this time. Item three is our flag salute. We're pleased this evening to have John Murray from the Aurora Grande Lions Club will lead us in the flag salute. If you would please remain standing for our invocation. Pastor Robert Banker is here from the Open Door Church. John?
Please face the American flag and follow me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Shall we pray? Again, our eternal Father, how thankful we are again to be able to be here tonight. And we thank you for the many blessings that we receive, for the wonderful weather that we've been having. And when we think of those in the Midwest who have been inundated with storms and various weather activities. And Father, we just thank you for all the things that we enjoy. We thank you for the service of the council and the time that they commit to the business of the community. And Father, we just pray that you would bless them, give them wisdom and guidance, dear Lord, we pray. And then we would remember also our service people who are serving around the world. And Father, we pray that we might be thankful for the freedom that they maintain for us. These things we ask in our Savior's name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Pastor. Well, before we get started, John, you remember the routine, I think. When you lead us in the flag salute, you get a few minutes of airtime to talk about Lions. What's new and exciting?
Well, I don't know where to begin, so I'll go back just to this spring there. We participated in the 7th and 8th grade boys' basketball tournament, and also the Aurora Grande 7th and 8th graders basketball tournament for the girls. We plan to participate in the Harvest Fest and the Turkey Trot that's coming up. Mm-hmm. And we are looking for some fine citizens that will be willing to help us serve the community even more.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for being here, John. Appreciate all the work that the Lions does for the community.
We appreciate doing it.
All right, we'll move on to item number 5, special presentations. We have none this evening. Item 6 is agenda review. Move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only, and all further readings be... Okay, seeing none, we'll close the community comments and suggestions, and that will take us to the consent agenda. The consent agenda is a group of items that the council normally approves in one action, unless any member of the council would like to pull a particular item for further comment or an independent action. This is also an opportunity for the public to come forward and address any of the consent items that are posted on this evening's agenda. And if you're following along this evening, those would be consent items 8A through 8I. So once again, I would like to first ask the public if there's anyone who would like to come forward on any of the items on consent. This would be an opportunity. Anyone?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'm Sean St. Denis with SP Maintenance Services, your current hanging in there street sweeping contractor. After reviewing the street sweeping cost breakdown presented by the latest staff report, I have some observations I'd like to share. These figures are presented as actual costs. When except for the equipment purchase costs, they're actually rough estimates. I sent an email to every member of the council after the last special meeting with a breakdown of our actual costs for doing this service under the current contract. I received responses from two council members. I really thank those two council members for that sign of respect. In the staff's process of addressing the budget shortfall, the top priority was maintaining the city's service levels. And I'm confidently arguing that the only way these street sweeping estimates become reality is by dramatically reducing your service level. This may end up being the prudent thing to do. I don't know. However, that's not what's being presented, and it has not been offered or looked at as an option for my contract. I'd like to briefly comment on a couple items, cost analysis items. Labor, it's estimated at 54 hours a month to perform services in-house. That's based on sweeping 310 curb miles at 6 miles per hour. All the data is in the report. This speed is actually a maximum effective sweeping speed for a street sweeper. It's not an actual general speed for sweeping in all conditions. Actual speeds vary, and the average is much less. It takes us 100 hours a month to service this contract currently, and we're trying to make a profit at it. We're not sitting around dragging our feet. In that labor, there's an extra 2.3 hours a month left over for non-sweeping activity. 2.3 hours a month for non-sweeping activity. That's inspecting your machine daily, fueling, filling the water for the dust control system, driving to your route, dumping, doing the daily maintenance on the machine, et cetera. Daily maintenance alone is going to take a half hour a day on a piece of equipment like that. We do it every day. And at the city's labor rate of $43.65 an hour, it won't take long for real labor costs to greatly exceed your estimates. And in the final cost comparison of in-house versus contracted sweeping, that labor cost is taken out for some reason, completely taken out of the equation. Fuel data available from case studies and provided by the equipment dealers, which I have a copy of here from the equipment suppliers, that's the cost of that process. We average 83 tons a month of debris going to the landfill off of the city streets and parking lots in Arroyo Grande at $17 a ton. I understand from Mr. Spagnuolo that even that debris will be dumped for free. However, it has to be handled. There's $2,500 a year in there to handle all that debris. Finally, the in-house costs compared to contract prices are all done at $23 a curb mile. That's what the analysis has done. Our current contract is $20 a curb mile. That's the current contract in place. So I just hope the council will take some time to ask some questions before making a decision on this matter. And again, I welcome any and all contact with any members of the council to share any information I have. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else who would like to come forward on consent? Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public portion of the consent agenda and bring this back to the council. What is the will of the council?
I'd like to pull 8H, please.
Okay. 8H, any others?
No.
Okay. Then I will entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8I, with the exception of 8H.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Anything to read in there tonight, Tim?
No, Mayor Ferraro.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferraro?
Yes. Councilmember Arnold, then, 8H.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I actually have a couple questions for Sean, if you wouldn't mind coming back up to the mic. Thank you. From reading your letter that you sent us, you did mention that you'd be willing to continue the $20 per mile in 08 as a means to helping out along with everybody else that's being forced to cut back right now. But I also read in the staff a report that there is a fuel surcharge that is anticipated come July 1. Would that be on top of the $20, or is that negotiable? If there is a surcharge, what would that surcharge look like?
That letter went out to every one of our customers in our customer list, and it's absolutely negotiable. Again, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to work with the city, and I think that's something we can get around.
Okay. And, let's see here. I guess the other question I have is, when I looked at the costs that you had in your breakdown, I was actually trying to figure out why you wanted this contract, and I don't say that in jest. Looking at your numbers and looking at what you're making, I was struggling to see where this was a profitable business for you.
That's a great question. We're able to spread the cost of the equipment, which is the lion's share of the cost, over more than one job. For example, we sweep for Grover Beach. We sweep for Napomo Community Services District. We do other private work, private developments with that piece of equipment. So, the burden of that equipment isn't only on one job.
Okay.
So.
And then the last question that I think is the last question, looking at the staff's actual costs, I'm trying to get a baseline for your miles.
I understand your question. I didn't verify the number. However, there are other costs involved there. We sweep city parking lots once a month also, or on a scheduled basis. I'm not sure if they're all once a month, to be honest with you. But those are part of our current contract. I believe it's a flat rate of $800 a month, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. currently, to do all the parks and things like that, which I don't see where those are reflected. Apparently, they're in that 54 hours a month of labor. However, that's pretty hard to squeeze that in.
I did think of one more.
On the city's, or on the in-house.
No, I understood that. One of the things that I talked to the city manager about as a means to possibly save some additional funds, whether it was in-house or contract out, was scaling back, because I believe right now the frequency is once a month. Is that correct, each street?
There are varying frequencies around the city. Some things are once a month. Some things are twice a week. Some things are twice a month.
Is that flexible in the contract as well, as if we chose to say, if we added 25% to the time frame, maybe some things it wouldn't be viable. But I guess I look at my own neighborhood where you came by today by chance. If you came by next week, would have I seen a dramatic difference in my neighborhood because there aren't a lot of deciduous trees and things like that? Probably not. And so I guess, is that an option, again, in your contract, either the way it is today, because I haven't seen your contract, or in negotiations?
I believe that's up to the council. My current contract is on a month-to-month basis, so that's kind of why we're here.
And is that something that you'd be open to, I guess, is the question?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, those are all the questions that I have for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Don, did you want to add anything?
No, Mr. Mayor, I'm just here to answer questions.
Any questions for Don?
Yeah, I guess I'll ask you the same question. On the annual budget savings on page 3 of the item, you're showing a contract number of in 08-09 of 95 and then 106 and then 113. So I take it the difference, which is approximately $10,000 difference, is that the parking lots that was referenced?
Oh, that's part of it, yes. That's part of it. I think, though, we wanted to add, as far as the numbers go, I think the total cost there is 85, I think, is what we wanted to show. But, one of the things that we didn't show here was the current contract, and that's 80. That's $20 per curb mile, and that's a total is $84,000, including the 227 sweeping. So at 23 miles, the calculation did come out at 95.
Okay, well, and actually, if you just go straight on miles and no special stuff, it's actually $74,400 mm-hmm. if you take the 20 miles times the 310 times 12.
Right.
So under that number right there, based on what I'm seeing, if we're not counting special items, which I'm not really seeing where special items are added in, there was discussion that this is available to us.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, under the current contract today, then I see them being $2,000 a year cheaper than what contracting would be.
Yeah, and maybe I can explain that a little bit better by using what we get as bills.
We're not using something we are spending money for. This isn't a freebie, and so whether we cut on the street sweeping contract or we cut back on employee, the net effect is that somebody's being impacted on a dollar basis. And so what I was trying to look at was the actual cost. And then and I asked Steve this question, and it's probably is good for you. There's no insurance that I see right now, and I understand this is probably being covered under the JPIA. But if I am correct, we have $50,000, $75,000, $100,000 copay before we are even into the insurance. Okay, so it's $30,000 just right at the top, and then there's still a sharing as we go up. And so I guess my concern is, since we're not actually factoring in insurance, but we're actually assuming risk, one minor accident probably eats up savings for a while, and a major accident destroys this plan. And whereas right now that insurance is handled by the so I guess I'm still looking at this and not seeing all the costs, I think, accurately. So I guess I don't know if you want to comment on that, your feelings on the insurance, but to me, I think it's pretty real.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good issue. I'm not sure how we'd estimate, place a value of the cost into that analysis. I'm thinking, once again, the action this evening is just authorizing staff to solicit bids for the vehicle, although it was our intent to try to hopefully get some direction on whether or not council was supportive of moving ahead with this item. But Councilmember Arnold's brought up a number of good questions, and even though we're confident if we make those adjustments, you know, we're pretty confident it's still going to be cost effective, but I would like to make sure we're all confident that we're working with accurate figures and that we are, you know, comparing apples to apples. I think that's a very good point. So I guess my suggestion tonight would be to recommend going ahead and approving us to go forward getting the bids, which only gives us even more, you know, more accurate number as far as projecting our cost. And then when we come back, we have to come back again anyways to get approval to issue the purchase. And at that time, we could spend some time addressing some of the items that council member brought up as far as having those costs incorporated. And then maybe even meet with Mr. St. Denis and see if we can compare some compare some figures on where we're different, and maybe we can justify those better if we share some information and see where each of us is coming from in their operations.
I guess the only concern that I have with that process is, one, we're leaving one person up in the air for a while on what's going to happen to their business, but also, based on his willingness right now to continue the contract at the $20 a mile, I don't see how in the next year this is cost effective. It may be in the future if he has to absolutely raise his rates, but at this point in time, I see this as being actually a more expensive proposition for the city right now. I think there are options here if we're looking to save some money in the street sweeping program to literally look at the street by street, and I know the will is on the bid.
Okay. Joe, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I'd like to examine, and not right now, but I'd like to examine in more detail some of the issues in terms of hours that were brought up by the contractor in saying that it's not 54, but it's closer to 100. And I think we ought to look at that and see what kind of experience we really can expect on that. And if there's other costs that we have underestimated for the estimates we're looking at, I think we should look at that before we make a final decision. But I can support going forward with getting the bids for the equipment.
Do you have a comment,
Sean? Yeah, I too can support going forward with the bids for the equipment. I tend to agree with the other councilman that I really have serious doubts about whether this really works out. It's just at least counterintuitive to me that we can go out and buy a brand new machine, use it 10 hours a week, and come out ahead of a group that's using it 40 hours a week in multiple applications with somebody who works at it full time and is obviously, at least in my opinion, probably going to be more efficient at that, more specialized in that. It just seems unlikely that we're actually saving money. We may be saving a position because we can share a position, but the time that that position is taking away to do the sweeping is time that actually would be better spent on other service levels rather than maintaining this service level. We're reducing other service levels to get it done. So I'm tending to really have some serious doubts whether this is really the most effective way to save the $20,000, whatever it is we have in the savings.
Okay. Well, I guess my position on it is I'm going to support going ahead with the recommendation of staff tonight, simply because it provides more information for us, and more information is always better than not enough when we have a decision to make. But I think we may be missing the basic premise here, and that is that we're in a position right now where we essentially have to do more with less. And that's where we're at. There's a difference between soft dollars and hard dollars. And the soft dollars are those costs that are subsumed within the position. And, there's a recognition that position is going to have to expand in scope. And something's going to have to give. But the position stays intact, at least. So I don't think we can not factor in the soft dollar benefit. That said, the whole issue of liability and the insurance is something that I had not considered. So I would be interested in maybe getting some feedback in that area, because I think Councilmember Arnold raises a good point there that we need to consider. So when you come back with that additional information on the equipment, then perhaps we can have some commentary on that. Okay.
I have an additional request here. I'd also like to see if we could see the breakdown of when the streets are sweeped. I think Councilman Arnold raises another question, too, about that. We really should take a look at that. Maybe that's where the savings may be, and a small service reduction there may actually save us some money as well. But I just assumed it was they swept every street every day, you know, once a week or whatever the routine was. It was always
Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. All right, that will take us to item 9, public hearings. We have 4 this evening. The first is 9A, consideration of an amended and restated solid waste collection, recycling, and green waste franchise agreement. You're going to do this one, Steve?
Sore throat here. Trouble with my voice. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, the city's existing franchise agreement with South County Sanitary Service, Inc. for refuse, greenhouse, and recycling collection was originally due to expire in November 2007. In September 2007, the city received a request from South County Sanitary Service for a 15-year extension. At that time, the City Council approved an initial 1-year extension to provide the time necessary for staff to negotiate a new agreement. Staff then obtained the services of Bill Worrell with the San Luis Obispo Integrated Waste Management Authority to assist in coordinating the negotiations on behalf of the city and in conjunction with the cities of Pismo Beach and Grover Beach. Based on Mr. Worrell's experience and research, it was recommended to negotiate a new agreement rather than issue a request for proposal. The city's current rates are among the lowest in the state, and the city's history of service from South County Sanitary Service has been very positive. Therefore, issuing an RFP could risk could run the risk of obtaining proposals from firms that may offer a low initial rate, but would likely end up later in higher rates and poorer service. So the negotiation of the agreement has been completed and is presented to the City Council for your consideration this evening. It contains a number of new benefits to the city and the community. First of all, staff would not normally recommend such a lengthy franchise agreement. However, it was requested by South County Sanitary Service in order to reduce their costs associated with financing of the expansion of the landfill. This not only benefits the operator by reducing their landfill fees, but it also benefits the city's refuse rates by helping to maintain lower tipping fees long term.
in addition to help compensate the city for the length of the franchise term, the operator has agreed to provide a new fee to the city that will generate about $22,000 annually and will also not be a pass-through to the customer. Customer rates will be held at the current amount, and no additional adjustments will be reviewed or considered for another year, and so our customers will be able to go 2 years without any rate adjustments. In addition, future rate adjustments will also be evaluated based on the same methodology that we've used in the past. And of this service to once a month and to limit it to an amount that would fit in an additional blue recycling bin. And lastly, the operator also agreed to provide to expand the service that they provide to the city directly in terms of collection of refuse at city sites at no charge to the city. So at this time, I'd like to mention that both Bill Worrell from the Integrated Waste Management Authority and Tom Martin representing South County Sanitary Service, Inc. are both here to answer any questions that you have, and I'd be happy to answer any questions myself, and then approval of the new franchise agreement is respectfully recommended.
Council will have questions. We'll start with Joe. Sorry,
Councilmember. Okay, I just have one question that may be fairly simple, but how are they going to track the extra blue waste, the extra blue recyclable on a monthly basis? If you're allowed to do it once a month, is that going to be the driver's going to have to track
I
that?
I think probably Mr. Martin would be the best person to respond to that question.
Tom Martin from South County Sanitary. What the drivers do now is if you have extra put out beside your can, they have to call the office, and it's noted in the office, and then there's a charge associated with it. So once a month, they'll just waive that extra fee.
So
put notes in the customer file so that if you do it the following week.
So the driver is going to call in automatically.
The driver's going to call in. Nothing changes for the driver.
Okay, great. Thank you.
The office has to take care of some business.
While you're up there, Tom, I'm going to wedge in here just a second because I had a question on that same issue, and I understand that it's probably a lot easier to track frequency than it is amount. I'm looking at the method that's going to be used, which I'm sure is purely up to the opinion of the driver. But how do we in fact come to a determination as to whether the amount that's excess could or could not fit into the waste barrel? I mean, that seems to me to be, I mean, if it's all recyclable, why not just take it and do it once a month?
The reality is that it's an automated service, and the system is priced to collect it automated. If the driver has to empty the can, get out, reload it, get back in his truck, empty the can again, get out of the truck again, reload it, an unlimited quantity over 5,300 households during the week, you would destroy the automated collection end of it.
Okay, well, first of all, I doubt if it's going to be, every household that's going to have that. The second thing is there's no, what you're saying is there's no capability to load it by hand. It has to go in the barrel and
that's
on.
Correct. There is no way to get it in the truck without putting it back in the can, and that's the reality is that if you put out two extra bags, the guy can throw those in the can again. I would encourage every home to get a 96 blue.
It was going to be my next question.
I've got a whole inventory full of them, and we would prefer that you have a 96 blue because then you can put everything in it with the lid closed flat, no problems. Now, they tend to be a little bit bigger if you're storing them in your garage. That may be an issue, but we have 96 blues available for anybody that wants to switch. Call the office, and we'll come out and give you the bigger can.
Okay.
And there's no difference in your pricing because it's based on the size of your garbage waste.
Right. Okay.
Cool. I'm going to follow up this one too, because I think I'm the one that brought this because I'm one of your customers who does a lot of recycling. I actually have two 96 blues, and most weeks they're full. My question is, in my case, will I get to fill up both blues?
Doubled. Yeah.
Double. So basically, there is a real incentive for everyone then to have the big 96.
Right.
And if you
have two, then we'll refill the two when you have, you know, whatever event it is that when you make a Costco trip that requires
you go.
You to fill up both of them and have some extra.
Okay.
Our only problem is that it needs to be in the can because there is no way for the driver to get it up in the truck.
Yeah, I do think this is a good agreement. I think it's always a little hesitant to go 15 years, but I think that that's probably the way to go here considering the issues with the landfill. I do like the extra recycling. I probably will actually order a 96 blue because it always seems like there's that one piece of styrofoam that won't fit in there. But so I can certainly support what we're going forward with tonight. I think it's a good program. Thanks.
I was waiting for somebody, but nobody did it. Okay, Councilmember Costello.
I too can support this. I think the length is offset by the advantages in terms of landfill expansion and the protections that we have in place. If the rates seem to be out of line, there's a way to go back and regulate that if that's the case. So I can support this tonight, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I've actually been really looking forward to having this come forward because I've had a fit. I know Steve's heard from me several times when I've called to have my extra recycling taken away. And so I think this is a fair and reasonable way to do it. I'm glad to see, well, I know it's not a done deal yet that the landfill is going to expand. I know that's going to be quite the challenge for you. So anything we can do to help that I think is reasonable. The fact that the fees are locked in, your fee increases have been reasonable in the past, and based on this agreement will be in the future. So I can definitely support this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll make it unanimous. I'm pleased with the fact that we do have a larger inventory of the 96-gallon bins. Those things, I have one as well, and it's just me in the house. And I wind up filling up at least half, if not all of it. So the lingering question I had was whether or not there was any ability to get the excess in unless it was in the barrel. So now that I've got that straight. This is one of our municipal systems and services that really functions well, and I'm very pleased with the service, and I think this agreement will serve us well into the future, so I can support it. The only thing I would suggest is that there be better observation on occasion on some of the drivers, because I got a bill, I think two bills ago, that said extra service. And I called the office, and they said, well, yeah, you had extra service. And I said, no, I didn't. And I was led to believe that the driver never made mistakes. So I had to convince him that he made a mistake that time. So anyway, these things happen. If there are no other comments, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve and authorize you, the mayor, to execute the amended and restated solid waste collection, recycling, and green waste franchise agreement with South County Sanitary Service Incorporated.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Farrar?
Yes. All right, that will take us to our second public hearing, 9B, consideration of a resolution amending the city master fee.
To your right, no, too far.
What if I hit F5, will that work?
Yeah, F5 does.
There you go.
Okay, thank you. You can tell my amateur at this. Appreciate the instruction. Anyway, should I start over or are we?
No, go ahead.
Okay. The financial impact of adopting resolutions is expected to increase child care revenues during the school year to at least $410,000, which actually will result in an increase of about $100,000 per school year. Give you a little bit of background. Some of the stuff I talked about at our meeting on May 29th, so I'll go through this relatively quickly. We have four child care sites, Harlow, Ocean View, and Branch Elementary Schools are all before and after school child care programs. We have care from 7 o'clock in the morning till the time school starts, from the time school gets out until 6 p.m. The Elm Street Community Center is strictly a kindergarten child care program. It's open from 7 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock in the evening on weekdays. our structure for the last 20 years, in fact, since we in the inception of the program, has been a drop-in structure, which is very convenient for parents. And the reason it's convenient is because they can use as little as 1 hour a day. They only pay for hours that they use, so it's very cost-efficient for them, and it's just as convenient as can be. However, clearly it's not as cost-effective as we'd like at the city. You look at fiscal year 2006-2007, we actually, the city subsidized the program $170,000, which is extremely substantial. In addition, the drop-in structure promotes overstaffing because we don't always know how many children we're going to have each day. We may assume there's going to be 60 kids at a program, assuming, say, you have full capacity, but perhaps only 40 show up, and we have maybe one or two more staff on site than we actually need. The Children in Motion program, other than providing child care, has several other benefits to the city. And it provides a pool of staff to help with seasonal playground programs, winter, spring, and summer. Provides substitute preschool teachers. We actually have two child care staff for helping with our preschool program right now, because we have one instructor passed away, another had brain surgery. Helps provide support for our special events, such as our father-daughter date night, which just happened last Saturday night. And provides opportunity for staff to engage participating children and families in other recreation programs, such as special events, classes, and sports leagues. As expected, we have number of alternatives for the council. Can approve staff's recommendation to adopt a resolution amending the master fee schedule for the Children in Motion program. Can choose not to approve staff's recommendation and pursue transfer of the program to the YMCA or the Boys and Girls Club. Can modify Children in Motion fees and adopt the resolution. Modify staff's recommendation and approve. Do not approve staff recommendations or provide direction to staff. Going on to analysis of the issues, the increase in our cost for this program, there's a number of reasons for it. Increased fees from the school district for busing as well as for use of facilities. All our facilities used to be free with the school district. A couple of years ago, they started charging us daily, which is something we didn't have to deal with before. We've had experienced an increase in licensing fees from the state. Our administrative costs for staff have gone up. We actually have three almost full-time staff who are budgeted from the Children in Motion program. A little quarter of an hour. Last year we instituted a requirement that they pay for at least 1 hour a day. Going on with analysis, our recommendations now, we're looking to institute, if approved by the council, actually establish 4-week fees or monthly fees based on the days of the week that the children use. Participants will pay in advance. During the summer, winter, and spring summer breaks, they can choose between 3, 4, or 5-day programs, and there will be actually half-day programs available for during summer school. There will be some necessity for prorating fees on days when we have half-days for school, teacher in-service training days, parent-teacher conferences, things of that sort. We expect the changes to, again, increase our projected revenue by at least $100,000 during the school year. It'll help us identify the number of participants we should have daily, which in turn should help us avoid having overstaffing. Again, going on with the analysis, we'd like to evaluate this program at 6 months, actually at mid-year, see how we're doing and decide what direction we want to take at that time. And I mentioned earlier on in our alternatives, the Boys and Girls Club and the YMCA have both expressed interest in this program. I have up here a sample of our fee structure. This differs somewhat from what I showed you May 29th. The fees are actually lower than what I showed you on the 29th, because one of the things we hadn't considered with our fee structure then is the fact that we have the Bright Futures program, which reimburses the city about $65,000 a year. We hadn't included those fees in our original projections. So consequently, our hourly rate for mornings, for participants to use a day program 5 days a week, would actually be $3 an hour instead of, I think we were starting at $3.50 on my previous recommendation. So as you can see, 5 days a week is the cheapest way to go. $3 an hour. So this is an example at Ocean View School. Costs children $90 a month for mornings, $180 in the afternoons. And you see as we go through, the less days a week that they use, the more expensive per hour the program becomes. Going on, you see the 3-day rate as well as the 2-day rate. We actually have a separate, well, part of the recommendation is for fees for our winter, spring, and summer playground programs, or not playground programs, but summer vacation programs. You can see our five-day-a-week program is $350 an hour. This is actually works out to be $140 a week. Our instead of doing full month or four-week rates for the winter, summer, well, we can't do it for winter and spring, obviously, because there's not 4 weeks there. But during the summer, so many people are on vacation, it's unrealistic to expect people to pay for a full month when they may be gone on vacation for 2 weeks. So during the summer, we're recommending a one-week fee structure. You'll see also that we, during the summer, we'll be charging a non-resident fee of $10 per week. We do not recommend that during the school year because the kids don't really have a choice what school they go to. They're pretty much assigned where they're going to go. But we do, people do have a choice during the summer what program they'll participate in, so we're recommending a non-resident fee of $10 per week. Talk a little bit about how we came up with our fee structure. Staff actually went back to last fall and spring, counted up. You took some of our roll sheets and counted up how many kids of our of staff's recommendation. It should increase revenues by at least $100,000 for the school year. It should reduce overstaffing. Costs will not change, actually, for participants to use the program on a full-time basis. It's $3 an hour now, and it will remain $3 an hour for those people who are using it on a full-time basis. And the fees that we're looking to charge will be still less than our competitors, or I shouldn't say our competitors, other people in the area. Other agencies. Naturally, there are some disadvantages to raising our fees. The cost increase, there would be substantial cost increase for part-time users. May prove to be too costly for some families, which could create a situation where we have more latchkey programs, meaning children who go home after school instead of going and having child care. Or it may create a situation where some parents, it's more economical for them to stop working as opposed to pay the child care fees. With that, I'd answer any questions the council may have, or my staff can answer the questions.
Questions or clarifications in the staff report? Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You mentioned the YMCA. What is, I guess, the pros and cons and the costs of having the YMCA take it over? I think when we talked before, you had mentioned that it was more expensive considerably. And I'm asking this question so that people understand we're not trying to make a profit on the program. We're just trying not to lose money.
Well, actually, that's a good question. Our format, the format that we're looking to institute is similar to what the YMCA does. However, our fee structure is somewhat less. Brenda, Carrie, you guys might be able to answer this better than I, but I believe that the YMCA's beginning hourly rate is around $350 an hour during the school year. Is that accurate? So we're about, just for the full-time participants, it'd be 50 cents an hour less.
And so everything else is basically fairly even. It's just it is definitely cheaper for us to offer it to the community than to sub it out.
I believe so.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Councilor Costello.
Doug, in looking at the master fee schedule you gave us here, I'm trying to remember. I know my son and my daughters used this service back when they were the right age. In the morning, we start at 7 and go till school starts. What is that? Is that an hour and a half in the morning?
It fluctuates. Actually, some schools might be an hour and a quarter, some hour and a half, yes.
So the full-time basis here for mornings is $90 for two schools. So that means 30 hours for 20 days is 1.5 hours?
Yes.
Okay. So
that's correct.
And people are currently paying the $3 an hour? So.
Yes, they are.
And if you're using it on a casual basis or an as-needed basis, is that's in full-hour increments right now?
The first hour, say if somebody only uses a half hour a day, we still charge them for at least 1 hour a day. After that, I believe it goes in quarter-hour increments.
It's half-hour
half-hour increments.
Half-hour increments.
Starting at 1 hour, then going one and a half, two.
And that's still just the $3 an hour at this time?
At this time, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Do you have a question?
Yeah, on the Bright Futures program, I know that the YMCA is dealing with the state budget issues and whether any of the state money will be coming through at all. Is the Bright Futures program a state program?
The Bright Futures program, I think the Bright Futures program we have at Harlow actually is federal money that goes to the state and then goes to a draft of the contract yesterday. So the assembly will go to the city attorney soon.
And I had confirmed the same.
with Jennifer at the YMCA also. And I guess there is some issue with some of the EOC payments, maybe delayed, but we should proceed with.
Right. What Steve is mentioning, some of the EOC payments, I believe that the state is not going to allow new participants in the EOC program, Equal Opportunity Commission. However, they have assured us that they will continue paying for participants who are in the program now. If, indeed, the EOC doesn't pay the full fee that we were looking to charge, then we will in turn charge those parents for the balance of what is owed.
Okay. I think they're slightly separate, but if it's federal money, then it's the delay in the state budget that was the issue, is that the money may eventually be there, probably, but there could be, who knows, 3, 4, 5, 6 month delay. Who knows how long it'll take them.
Yeah, we're hearing the same thing, particularly with EOC money. There may be a delay in getting those payments.
And is that Bright Futures money, is it, and I've forgotten what it was referring to earlier, but is it based on if your participation went down, would the reimbursement from Bright Futures goes down as well?
Carrie, you could probably answer that better than I could. We a contract with them for a certain number of staff per day. There's a huge waiting list for this program right now. And in fact, I should mention that this Harlow School has asked us perhaps to provide paid child care in the afternoons in addition to the Bright Futures program. So that's how many people want to get into this program.
What was your question again?
What to do with is the money you receive from Bright Futures dependent on participation?
No, they have certain levels they have to meet, but we just bill them monthly for 6 staff times a certain hours, and they try to get around 85 or more kids, but it doesn't actually have to do with that at all. It's just kind of a flat fee times this times that, and okay. It doesn't go up or down.
All right, thank you.
Okay. This is a public hearing. Once again, if there are members of the audience would like to come forward and comment on 9B, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Anyone? Okay. We'll close the public hearing portion of 9B then and bring it back to the council. We'll start with Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, I do think this is it is the appropriate way to go here, that we look at really analyzing the costs and participation rates, and if it is in fact the fact that we're providing a lot of staff and not necessarily having full participation, I think that clearly we're going to be unable to offer that service or offer less of it. So I do think staff's approach here of kind of firming up what the participation is going to be is the obvious way to go, so that we can be efficient in providing what services that we're capable of providing here. And if it it turns out that there's no increase in cost to the people who are really participating full time, I can see where this could actually work out quite well. And hopefully we won't lose too many participants and still be able to pull off the program. So I don't have any trouble supporting it going forward.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. One more question, Doug, before I get to say anything else. Do we know how many people are participating full-time versus part-time?
I happen to have that information. At Branch School in the mornings, we're looking at 6 people are full-time. They're there virtually every day. When you go down to 4 or 3 in 2 days, there's a lot more participants. And I actually attached in the handout I gave you, it lays it all out. I was going to put this on the screen, but I put it up there earlier on the overhead projector, but it was so blurry it wouldn't have done us any good.
Okay, thank you, Doug, and thanks for the information. Appreciate it. I'll start out by saying that, like I say, my family used this program probably 15 of the years we've lived here, and it's great program. Very pleased with it. My daughter worked for it for a while too. I think that it's the way to go. I can agree that trying to bring the fees into a more uniform system and going to a standardized and an escalated rate for the part-time users is probably an effective way to try to control that. I kind of regret that it can't continue to be a casual type program where if someone has a need, they can just drop the student off or depend on it for irregular days. And I wonder if maybe there's a way we can look at it and maybe being able to accommodate that somehow in the future. But my fear is that we're going to lose some users, and it is going to become too costly for some families. But I don't think there's a whole lot we can do about that right now. well. So I will support going forward with the proposals that have been submitted.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, can support this. I mean, it's unfortunate that it will impact some people, but at the same token, it's going to probably make the program a lot more efficient since you'll have a visibility for staffing purposes. So it's a massive amount of subsidy that we've been providing at this point in time. So hopefully it won't impact too many people. It will definitely impact a few, but I can support it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I can support this as well. Having many years of experience with child care programs, not this one, but others in San Luis and here in Arroyo Grande, I've never known one that didn't have some form of a fixed rate. And the fact that we, for many years, have offered the drop-in service, I think, is commendable. But obviously, it produces many unknowns, and it's very difficult to establish a budget or to run an efficient program when you don't know how many kids are going to be coming in on a daily basis. So it's extremely difficult to structure a budget around the unknown. So I can support this as well. And again, if it inconveniences people, it's unfortunate. But clearly, we cannot continue to subsidize this program at the level that we're doing. So I think this is probably the best strategy that we can come up with. I appreciate the work that went into it, Doug, and the staff. We'll give it a shot and maybe take another look at it, as I'm sure we will many of our budget strategies, given the situation. So I can support this as well, and I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move a resolution of the City Council of the
Chapter 10.6 parking. And we're talking about the 2-hour parking restriction in the village.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Council members. as you know, over the years, in response to changing conditions, parking restrictions have been established throughout the city, including the village. Special to the village, however, is that the parking restrictions were established in the municipal code. And as you read, that's in section 10.16.060. It specifically calls out sections on East Branch Street, Bridge Street, and the Car Corral. But however, over time, parking restrictions have been added or modified in the village from what was established in the code. And I'd like to draw your attention to the exhibit I have up on the screen. The blue section, this being East Branch Street, this being Bridge, and this being the Car Corral, the code specifically calls out this section of Branch, and it even goes as far as calling out the distance from this intersection as 220 feet on one side and 260 feet on the other side. It also calls out this section up in this part of Bridge Street up to the Steel Bridge, what they call the Steel Bridge, and then the first 16 spots in the Car Corral closest to Bridge Street, Branch Street. So even though it's specific, things have changed throughout after that had been established. So the municipal code also has another section that addresses enforcement of limited parking, and that's section 10.16.055. And this section provides that the abilities for the enforcement officers to enforce restricted parking anywhere in the city, because right now they use section 060 for this portion, the blue portion, and then the red portion, which has been added over time, they use and cite section 055. So this requires them to know exactly where they're at and to know exactly the distance from this intersection to enforce the specific code sections. So to provide better enforcement, the PD has asked that we repeal Section 060 and use only Section 055. Appealing this section this evening will allow all enforcement all over the city, not just in the village and not specifically on the blue or red sections, to be enforced based on Section 10.16055. So at this time, we're not recommending that any of the parking areas or the existing restrictions be changed. We are recommending, however, that the municipal code be changed to address more than 10 years ago. And over time, through the formation of the Downtown Parking Advisory Board and actions by the Traffic Commission, the additional areas in red were added at the request of businesses and things like that. The parking restrictions and time limit restrictions, also stop signs, those were delegated to – the establishment of those areas were delegated to the Public Works Director in 93 by the council. So those particular approvals, they did not go through the council from 1993 on. So what would happen is we'd get requests from the Downtown Parking Advisory Board. There'd be changes. They'd be brought to the Traffic Commission, and then recommendations would be made to the Public Works Director, and then the restrictions would be signed. So that's how we kind of got from the blue to the red areas, specifically in the village. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does, and it leads me to, I guess, my next question, and that is that since those parking signs went up and the restrictions went up, I've talked to a number of merchants in the village, and my sense is that there may be mixed emotions about what we're trying to do here. Mm-hmm. 2 hours, and I understand what we don't want to do is have people coming in and parking on the street and taking up customer spaces. Mm-hmm. At the same time, customers who do come into the village may want to spend some time here. And if you're talking about, you know, going to lunch and then shopping for a while, that could take you closer to 3 hours than it could for 2 hours. So I'm just wondering if maybe we're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. That's number one. The other issue that I'm hearing is that by extending the two-hour limit to the car corral and the spaces back here, especially, you know, that pretty much limits business owners from parking there and employees from parking there for if they're going to be working the entire day. It pushes them farther out so that they're not readily accessible to the business itself. So I'm curious as to whether any thought was given to sufficient parking for employees and for business owners.
Well, I know that Rob has been staffing the Downtown Parking Advisory Board, so maybe we can have him try to answer that question.
Okay. Let's see if I can. Did you have this graphic as well? The Downtown Parking Advisory Board in October of last year, after 3 years of study, came up with some specific requests and recommendations dealing with changes to the two-hour parking. And as you've described it, the two-hour parking enforcement really accommodates closer to 3 hours because the timing of the initial tire marking and the follow-up to determine parking lots on the north side of Branch Street off of LaPointe and a portion of the Olahan Alley, which were inadequately signed, became signed. They were predominantly two-hour spaces already. It did produce some slight increase in enforcement violations. There were a series of letters received and complaints filed. The Downtown Parking Advisory Board met And the map that I'm putting on the screen is a current effort with 500 notices going out to all the employers and employees of the convenient locations. The gray shade are all-day parking spaces in close proximity to every business within the village. The darker gray or charcoal color are the two-hour limits. The only portions which were added were the Nelson Street half block, which has become commercial instead of previously residential, and the parallel portion of the car corral that connects to the lot behind Andrini's Briscoe Hotel. And as I said, those are about 36 spaces. They did initially request, the Public Works Department responded and signed the public lot behind the council chambers and an additional few spaces in the lot off of LaPointe Street. Those have now been retracted, reduced as a result of the complaint, so that there are far more spaces available for all-day parking than there are for customer convenience. They're just not immediately on the street in front of the business or at the immediate back door of the business. So it's about a 50-foot walk to almost every business to obtain a all-day parking place. And it was essentially, some of the complaints were just bad habits. They were parking in private parking lots or parking in portions that had been always two-hour parking, and they were doing it all day. So when they got a ticket, it finally dawned on them that the purpose of these public lots are primarily to serve the customer need.
Okay, was there any discussion about perhaps a three-hour limit instead of a two-hour limit?
The difficulty because of the frequency of patrolling, a three-hour limit, if laxly enforced, would enable all-day parking by a single move of the car at lunchtime, as an example. So they felt that with the two-hour signage and the actual frequency of enforcement, that it really is closer to three-hour parking. And by adequate notice and education of the public and the employees and employers, that there are plenty of areas in public lots and on public streets close to the village, in the village, that anybody can park all day right now.
Before we did this, or did you just go to the downtown parking advisory committee?
It was both, but the problem was there was no official participation of all the merchants in the village. So we printed up 500 notices, which is a two-sided flyer that explains where the all-day parking is. We wanted to do that concurrent with the signage, but the notice got delayed. So I think at this point that there were probably two dozen citations issued in April that were a result of people just habitually parking in a two-hour space that was then appropriately signed and enforced. And I don't know of any of those situations that convenient parking isn't immediately available within 50 feet of the space.
Okay. Any other questions on the staff report?
Just quickly, Rob, the map you're showing us is different from the graphic that Don showed us with the red and blue lines. I think the red lines show the lot behind council chambers here shows.
Yes, and that was signed in after the October Downtown Parking Advisory Board in, I believe, January, February. The signs were actually installed, and the lower part of that lot was designated for two-hour parking to be immediately adjacent to the back of the council chambers for a customer use for the businesses such as Branch Street Deli nearby.
Back to all day.
But now it is back to all day because it isn't frequently used. Even after that 1 or 2 month period, it was not being used for customer parking.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, just a real quick, relating back to the actual item, is the chief on board with this? I mean, this is really more of a policing. I actually thought this was coming up when I read it as a police action, not a public works.
Yeah, he's here. This was actually I had a meeting with the enforcement officers, and this was brought to my attention by them, and this is how we've got started on this whole thing. But maybe the chief can elaborate on that.
I guess what I'm asking is, does this work for you? What they're doing.
Yes, it does. I was at the parking advisory board meeting when we talked about the matter, and I think it was represented exactly the way they did tonight. Our enforcement activities are planned around this, and really what we're looking for is just to have one code section that we can handle all restricted parking with.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? All right, this is a public hearing. Once again, if there are members of the audience who would like to come forward on 9C, this would be an opportunity. Anyone? Okay, no one. We'll close the public hearing portion of 9C and bring this back to the council. We'll start with Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's funny the way you actually brought this up because actually when I first read the title, I thought we were actually changing the two-hour parking back to all day. And I was actually very supportive of that because I've heard a lot of complaints also about the two-hour parking. So I understand what this is. It's actually going to be more flexible for the police to enforce all parking. I hope your current map will solve the problems. I think probably Branch Street is the best location of all for the two-hour parking. That seems to me the most logical, where people can come in and out to get to the shops real quick. I know, and I think everybody in this room agrees, we don't want to be scaring off the customers. So we don't want to be Pismo. We don't want to be San Luis when it comes to parking. We want to be real liberal there. So I can support this because obviously this does not deal with those issues, but I think everybody up here is very concerned about is we don't want to be scaring away people, so I can support it. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, I do. I can support cleaning up the code to make it easier to enforce, more straightforward to enforce, and we'll deal with the other parking issues when they come up, so I won't stray off into that. Thanks.
Councilmember Costello.
And I can also support the change in the code sections. I think that makes a lot of sense. It's going to make it a lot easier for our patrol personnel to do their jobs. However, I have to agree with the comments that Councilmember Arnold made, and I share a lot of the concerns that I think we may want to revisit this down line, that 2 hours may not be enough, and I don't want to, you know, if you park there and walk away and someone comes by and chalks your tire, 2 hours later, you're it. 2 hours may not be long enough. I appreciate that there's a problem with all-day parking by employees taking away the convenience spaces for the shoppers. But I'll just reserve the right to revisit this sometime in the future.
Okay. I can support the the realignment of the code and bringing things, back in sync in terms of enforcement. But here again, I have to support the comments that were made earlier. I don't want us to become parking unfriendly, and I'm concerned that we may. So I don't know if it's possible. I don't know if we have a system in place to do it. But I'm thinking that at least during the, settling in with this new policy, that we might want to consider a warning citation for people who are a first offender. I don't know if we can do something like that, but at least some kind of a warning site that says, we know you've not been accustomed to a two-hour zone. It's now a two-hour zone. If you're a second offender, you will receive a parking site. But that at least gives them an extra layer of, an admonishment, if you will, before we, move to the actual site itself. I don't know if that's something we can do or not, but the extent to which we can make this transition a little more softer landing for people, then I think we should do it. Okay. If there's nothing else, then I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to propose an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande repealing Section 10.16.060 from Chapter 10.16 Parking of Title 10 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding two-hour parking restrictions in the village.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember
50. Proposed changes to the underground utility requirements are an effort to clarify existing language, update formatting, expand the use of underground in-lieu fees for commercial and mixed-use projects, and allow for a reduction of in-lieu fees for certain projects which provide significant public benefits. Last year, the City Council discussed this item and at that time gave staff direction to go back and do a little tweaking to the ordinance and try to include a sliding scale or similar mechanism to better relate in-lieu fees to project scale and public benefits. Yeah, I'm sans PowerPoint tonight. In your staff report, I tried to detail out all the changes to the code, and I just wanted to go over a couple of the major changes tonight. In Section B, titled Applicability, we've separated out two types of utility undergrounding. The first is service connections, also known as service drops. These are the wires that usually run from the main distribution line to the service of the house. We propose that in whenever it's feasible that anytime someone adds over 100 square feet to a residence, that they underground this service drop. And we tried to make that trigger consistent with sidewalk requirements. And the second type of undergrounding is for the main distribution lines, cable wires, phone wires, and that they would be required to be undergrounded in conjunction with larger discretionary projects such as tentative track maps, conditional use permits, and variances. Section C is in lieu fees, and it specifies out certain projects where the Planning Commission can consider the use of in-lieu fees instead of the actual requirement to underground the utilities. In subsection 1, fees can be considered when a project is located within a duly established undergrounding district. Subsection 2 allows for consideration of in-lieu fees if you're creating four or fewer parcels. And there's some sort of unique circumstance with the parcel. Maybe there's an abundance of overhead wires just coming to that parcel, which you don't see in other parcels within that area. And this also lowered the threshold. Before it was you can consider fees when you're doing a subdivision of 10 or fewer lots. Subsection 3 allows consideration of in-lieu fees for infill mixed-use projects on lots smaller than 10,000 square feet where they're providing four or less rental units as opposed to for sale units. And subsection 4 would allow the use of, or consideration of fees if it's determined that undergrounding requirement could be detrimental to economic development, affordable housing, or some other important public amenity. Section D is where we tried to incorporate a reduced or sliding scale to reduce in-lieu fees based on the project size or the amenities provided. Staff and the Planning Commission tried to use this idea where we could have a sliding scale.
It's, once again, a public hearing. Any member of the audience would like to come forward on 9D? No one on 9D. We'll close the public hearing portion, bring it back, and we'll start with Councilmember Arnold.
There's Mayor. Well, I have to thank you a lot, Jim, on this one. I know that I drove you a little bit crazy when I first mentioned it long ago because you actually asked me to come into your office and see if I could explain myself better, and I was pretty much in this vague sliding scale range. So I think this is actually very workable. I know that sometimes it's best to have things pinned down to an exact percentage. But the problem that I was having was the whole break line, where you exactly break something at. So I think the fact that it gives some flexibility, some reasonableness to the ordinance is going to make it a lot more workable for everyone. Obviously, if an in-lieu fee is reduced at the Planning Commission level and is not palatable, it can always be appealed to us anyways. But I think we find that in most cases, when things aren't real rigid, I think in this kind of case, it'll probably work out to be the best. So I commend your hard work on this one, and I can support this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Costello.
I, too, can support this. This has been a bone of contention for me since I was on the Planning Commission before I was on the council. I think that it's a positive step forward. It gives us some flexibility in dealing with a very thorny issue, and I will support this tonight.
Okay, thanks. Councilmember Guthrie.
And I'll echo that. This is certainly something I swear we've either seen a new ordinance or discussion of a new ordinance or something every 6 months since I've been on the Planning Commission and Council. In fact, I was thinking of maybe we'd add a whereas that it can't come back for 2 years, but I think that would tie the end of future councils. But at any rate, I can certainly support this. It does give a lot of flexibility here, and there is that feeling that wherever you draw the line, somebody just needs a little bit. Just a little bit more. So this does provide, you know, some negotiation parameters, and I think will probably help this a lot. Thank you.
Okay. I can support this as well. I was on the council, I think, when we originally drafted this thing, and I applaud the intent of the council at the time, which was certainly to try and remove as much of the overhead utilities as we could in the city, but I was a bit uncomfortable with it then because of the fact that it wasn't flexible and some of the parameters of the program were rather draconian. This is much more flexible and I think fair to the parties and does leave some discretion. So I can support this as well, and I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'll propose an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending section 16.68.050 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding underground utilities.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Item 10 is continued business. We have none. Item 11 is new business. 11A, fiscal year 07-08, third quarter budget update report. Good evening, Angie.
Good evening. First, I have to do something because it's really bugging the chief back there. That consultant is in front of staff. He didn't want to give anybody any for both years. As discussed at the budget shortfall meeting held on May 29th, several revenue sources are declining. Property taxes are declining due to the slow housing market. Sales tax is decreasing due to the point of sale audit prepared by the county. This audit revealed that the city had received sales tax from the unincorporated areas. Building fees and related revenues have decreased dramatically due to the decrease in overall building activity. Transit occupancy tax is less than projected due to the completion of the Hampton Inn being behind schedule. And children in motion revenues, as we discussed earlier, have decreased due to reductions in enrollment. The overall estimated decrease in 07-08 revenue is over $700,000, and the estimated decrease in 08-09 is $1.2 million. Staff prepared a plan for City Council consideration to address the budget situation as quickly as possible and presented this plan to the Council in detail at the special meeting held on May 29th. Tonight, staff is requesting that the budget adjustments addressing the budget shortfall be approved. This recommendation will minimize the budget loss in fiscal year 2007-08, and the budget will remain balanced in 08-09. The estimated fund balance for fiscal year 2007-08 is $1.3 million, or 9% of appropriations. However, this assumes that all revenues are received as budgeted and all expenditures are spent. Typically, this has not been the case, so we are hopeful that it will be around 10%. I would like to take this time to thank staff for all their hard work, and I would especially like to thank our city manager, who put in a lot of hours and a tremendous amount of work on this to help us get where we're at. And it took a lot of days, a lot of sleepless nights, and I know I just want to say appreciation to him. And at this time, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and if I can't answer them, I'll give it to Steve.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Angie?
Let him go first.
You're going to let him go first?
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll probably cover.
I'll wait for everybody else.
All right. Well, I have a question.
I don't have any
questions. Andrew, when we talked before about sales tax, and you had mentioned that the county did their audit and made a determination that, some of the revenue coming to us should have gone to them, and you were in the process of verifying, you know, whether those businesses were actually in the unincorporated area versus within the city. And I can't recall, but did we also talk about maybe trying to make a determination about whether the county got revenue that should have come to us? Did we explore that whole area?
Yeah, and that's what our contract with HDL, they do that. They go out and look and see. And, in fact, I was telling Steve just recently they had found some revenue that Grover Beach was getting that we should have been getting, so we're actually going to get reimbursed for that. So take from one to the other. So.
Well, that's going to make them real happy.
I know.
So. but in terms of the county, they're –
Yes,
I guess
HDL
their claim
is looking
legitimate.
At that. Yes. I did look over. They sent us the listing of the businesses that were in question, so I reviewed those, and there were a couple that were not in the city. So what they've done is they submitted it to the state, and the state will make the determination. They'll look at it and see if those businesses are, in fact, in the county and if the city.
That they did have problems with the contractor that they had to release, and they had secured a new contractor, which then assured us that within a very short period of time, we'd begin to see a much accelerated rate of activity. When we saw that the shingles up on the roof, we thought that was a good sign, but now it's been a few days and not much has happened to the shingles. I left a message for Gary White, one of the partners today, and I have not heard back from him. So I think all I can tell you at this point, we're definitely on top of it and trying to reach everybody we can and get a solid report by the end of this week in terms of where they're at. One of the purposes of this meeting tomorrow was to make it clear to them that we had recommended a small extension of the revenue sharing agreement based upon the fact that they were just slightly behind schedule and many of the issues were not at their fault. But at this point, I think at the very least, we would need to go back and negotiate an additional extension. I probably wouldn't recommend that we just delete it altogether. But for another extension, I'm certainly recommending that negotiate the terms and make some changes based on the prior extension, given what we're losing now every month from those delays.
Okay, thanks. Question? Go ahead.
In the, I guess, the proposed measures, there's a list of them, and we had some discussion on them at the other meeting, and then there, obviously the street sweepings in here and some other things. Any of these things actually are going to happen? Will they come back for a separate discussion and motion? I guess what I'm talking about specifically is there's some in regards to public works maintenance worker and a parts maintenance worker where we're doing a little bit of moving around of positions based on what's not been filled and potential use of some sales tax revenues. Are those... If we sign off on this tonight, is that then the done deal on this, or is that going to come back at some other time?
Some are and some aren't. Yeah, there are a pretty long list of implementation measures. At the next meeting, assuming everything goes correctly and we obtain approval from all the different labor groups, we're basically negotiating with each labor group now to try to get some concessions to help with this. They will all be hopefully voting this week. If that takes place, you will have a long list of measures to be voted on at the next meeting regarding different labor groups, changes to their MOUs. There was a couple position changes within the recommendations. Those will be before you next meeting. What else? The apartment inspection program that the chief is working on, that will come back July 22nd. It's not quite as urgent because it can be set up at any point in the year. As we mentioned before, the street sweeping item would come back to you. I think that would be the last meeting in July also.
I want to make sure that we understand the duties a little bit clearer, because I think that was a concern of Councilman Guthrie's at the last meeting, that, you know, really what we're doing is just moving the person without really any change in what they were doing. And the whole idea was that we were actually going to get an enhancement with the sales tax revenue and not.
Yeah, did you want me to go over that in more detail in terms of what?
It'd probably be good.
I mean, because I think there's good points on both sides. I think the point that Councilmember Guthrie is making is accurate, and I know the concern is accurate, but I also think we have some flexibility in this, how we handle these things. So in this situation, you have public works maintenance, and it's basically street repair maintenance. And then we had park maintenance, and that's mainly landscaping throughout the improvements we do in the city as well as the parks. And so when the sales tax passed, we defined parks and streets both within our infrastructure, and infrastructure enhancements was one of the goals. And so we funded two part-time positions in each of those functions. And those were, funded in this year's budget, but we have not yet hired them. When we got into the discussions about the budget problems, we held off further hiring them because our personnel regs indicate that any part-time employees are first in line for layoffs. So we didn't want to hire somebody and have them have to leave right away. So our proposal is that we move forward. These are positions that already been funded. They're not changing for next year. They're still dedicated for the same functions. They would still be funded from sales tax. So on those positions, nothing really changes from this year to next year. We just proceed with the same positions that would have been in place. The twist comes with having to make significant cuts and having to try to try to balance those throughout the organization. We do have a couple of retirements coming up, one in public works and one in parks, that we wanted to take advantage of. And we felt that those areas were areas based on our assessment of workload. While we would like to continue to enhance those functions, we also think that they could, you know, that they could handle one additional position and still maintain the primary functions. Key functions of their operations. And so a full-time current position in both those operations are proposed to be eliminated next year when those retirements take effect, and then they would be held vacant. And so I believe, I don't want to speak for Council Member Guthrie, but I think his feeling is when we did the sales tax measure, those were primarily set up to either be capital projects or be positions that would provide enhancements to particular areas such as public safety or infrastructure maintenance. And so those positions are still intended for the same thing. It's just because we're eliminating some other positions that they're not going to be really providing the same level of enhancement that they otherwise would have. So it gets a little bit fuzzy in terms of DeFerry's point. But yeah, that is a very good way to describe it. Is if we didn't have that sales tax money, we would be still laying off a position there, and plus we would not have these part-time positions either, and so we'd be much worse off, you know, than we are in either of these other scenarios.
Okay, I understand it much better now, yeah. So thank you.
That's Any good. Other questions?
Nope.
Do you have questions?
No questions.
Just sure.
It is a name different than it was last time.
Do you need an aspirin? Or? Okay, well, I'm going to move on while I still can. This is not a public hearing. However, this is a very key issue in the city, and we will allow people in the audience, any member of the public would like to come forward and comment on 11A. This would be an opportunity. Anyone? No one? Okay, we'll close public comment on 11A and bring this back to the council, and we'll start with Council Member Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. we've been discussing this
a while, and things are getting tough. I can support the alternatives that have been brought before us with the understanding that we're going to re-examine the street sweeping and see how those numbers compare out. And some of the individual measures are going to come before us in the future, but the report we've got tonight, I have no problem with approving the detailed budget adjustments listed in the third quarter budget report and approving Schedules A, B, and the budget shortfall recommendations, and approve the request for additional appropriations to the general fund.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I can support this tonight. I do want to commend again all the hard work of staff. I know this is not fun times, and I know that at times I may be trying you with some of my questions, but I really do want to understand it and make sure that everybody at home also understand it. And I think tonight I definitely, for one, feel much more comfortable with what has been discussed. So I can support the schedules with the caveat that there's a couple issues that we're going to be looking at in a little bit more detail. But the what has been proposed tonight, I can move forward with. So thank you.
Okay, thanks. Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I too will commend staff with certainly the putting together this plan and the time that you had was really certainly hard work and difficult going to find where the opportunities were. I still have the same fundamental objections that I had the other night. The first is that there's just not enough contingency here, and this has to do with the reserve fund. We've gone from what we hope to be a 20% to setting a 15% floor. Now we're either at 9 or 10%, depending on how things come in. There's a whole lot of variables here, and most of them are probably, I'll be less than optimistic, they're probably not going to turn out in our favor, and there's going to be other items down the road, and we just haven't left ourselves any room to deal with even a little, to have a balanced budget, to even deal with a little change, let alone several little change or a big one. So it's the contingency issue here that is one of my concerns. We really should have started longer ago to aim for a 15%. So I think this was we should be making more of an opportunity to set ourselves up for being in that position in the future, because otherwise we're going to be looking at trying to go from 7 or 8% reserve all the way to 15 in a single shot in the next budget cycle, and we really need to give our to do this in smaller steps. The second has to do with as was discussed, the it's not really a transfer, and that's, you know, I did use that word, but the fact that we are. We have the sales. We have two funds here. We have the general fund, and then we have the local sales tax fund. And in reality, they're the same fund. And all that stands between the two is this kind of artificial policy that we have, that we are going to spend the local sales tax fund. We're going to account for it separately, and we're going to spend it on either capital projects or enhancements. And while it's true that if we didn't have the sales tax available, we would be making these cuts without replace them, but in reality, we are formally moving in. We're creeping into the sales tax fund, and this is my concern here. It's actually, you know, I'm going to pick a number a little bit out of the blue, but we've actually moved into the sales tax fund with what we're proposing here tonight, about 10%, about $120,000, depending on how some of these things work out. So, when I said we need to formally do that, I don't know that I would support it, but I do think that we had clear intention that we would do whatever we needed to do to keep our general fund controlled to where it is now, and actually keep these other funds available for the items that really need to go, because there's just not a lot between these two. And if we were 5 years down the road and we were moving in, you know, that would be okay. But I don't think we're even a year into collecting the sales tax, and already we're moving into the local sales tax. So I can't support it on that issue as well. The final one has to do with where we're making the reductions. I understand we're doing it because it has the least pain, that we're choosing people who are retiring. But in reality, I think if we look at the direction that we had from the public, that in general the public wanted to see street improvements. They wanted to see the kind of infrastructure improvements. And the area that we're actually choosing to cut is generally in this area. Public Works takes by far the biggest hit here. And Public Works is probably the one area of infrastructure that I think we had direction from the public that they were most concerned that we stayed up with. So while I understand the reasons for moving this direction, if we really had a formal plan going forward that we were going to change this, I would be okay with that. But we don't. We're just going to balance the budget today and move on and hope that and deal with the next emergency when it comes. You put these three together, and it's just not a complete plan. I understand it was put together in a very short term, but it's just not a plan that I'm comfortable supporting. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, I guess I would have to respectfully disagree. I think I think what we have here in front of us is probably the best plan under the circumstances that we can come up with. With regard to public works, I'm not certain, but I think they're the largest budgeted department in the city, are they not? Or is it the police department? I think public works is.
Police is in operations, but when you figure in the capital improvement funds, then public works would be.
Okay. Well, it stands to reason that if they come in as significant a factor in our overall budget, then yes. I'm not completely happy with all of the strategies that are in place. I'm convinced that what we have here is necessary, and there are measures that we need to take. You know, the other thing that I mentioned, I think, earlier is the fact that the budget itself is dynamic. We don't know where we're going to be next year. All of the indicators are that probably we won't be in a very good spot. However, that said, if you listen to the news and depending on who you believe, the indicators are that that we're going to pull out of this slump, and I'm not quite sure how that's going to reconcile. The rest of the economy is going to reconcile itself with energy costs or what's going to happen in the energy field. But at the same time, what we have facing us in the future are variables and unknowns. So this system has to remain dynamic. And so that's why, as I've mentioned before, I fully expect these kinds of presentations and these kinds of strategy sessions to occur more frequently, certainly more frequently than our normal budget cycle. That's the name of the game when we get into a situation like this. We may decide at the next meeting or the meeting thereafter that some of the strategies that are proposed here aren't going to work for us and that we have to change. So, I think we probably could have done a better job some time ago in building up our reserves. It was certainly the direction of the council. But this was something that I think caught a lot of jurisdictions off guard, certainly us. So we're going to make the best of a bad situation, and we're going to move on. And that's pretty much where we're at with this. So I can support the staff's recommendation this evening. And we'll see where we are and at the end of the cycle and make adjustments as necessary. That's all we can do. So with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, can I make one more comment?
Yeah.
I think to follow up on your thoughts as well, I've had a lot of conversation with Steve as well and asking if we should be doing more. And one of the things that I've gotten from him that has made me, I don't know if comfortable is the right word, but at least understanding that he understands, and I don't think anybody questioned that, was that they are looking at a lot of additional areas. And so to do anything draconian as to cut a bunch of positions right now when there may be other alternatives available in the next several months, and I think that if I was looking at a static organization right now that was saying, okay, we've done everything we can, and we're going to weather this, and we don't need to think about it again, then I would probably be on the same page as Councilman Guthrie, because I'm very pessimistic and I'm a very optimistic person, and so that's not a real happy time for probably a lot of people, and so I don't think anybody is in the organization right now is believing that we are done, and so I just wanted to follow that up as well. So, thank you.
Okay. All right, any other comments? If not, once again, I'll entertain a motion. Okay, we will move to our last new business item, 11B, consideration to authorize an award
of a bid for police fleet leasing program. Could we cut that center bank of lights again, please?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. We're here tonight to talk about our police department fleet leasing program, our proposal. And a couple of things I wanted to start with before I go into the proposal is, as you know, one of the largest costs in a police department is to run the police fleet. And for the last 9 months, as we've talked about before, the police department has been looking at ways to economize and become more efficient in providing the services here to the city of Rio Grande. One of the things that we wanted to look at, of course, is the police fleet because of the cost and the size of the fleet. When we started this project, we had some project goals that I'd like to go over really quick. First, our number one goal was to return $108,133 for vehicle replacements in the 2007-2008 budget, and return that money to help address the budget shortfall plan you were just talking about. Our second goal was to have no budget increase in the 2008-2009 budget. We also wanted to reduce the fleet, the size of the police fleet, from 22 vehicles down to 19 vehicles. We wanted a cost-effective fleet program, fleet leasing program. We wanted to look at some multi-purpose vehicles as one of the things we wanted to do. Improve the quality, image, and resale value of the fleet, and also move to a greener, more miles per gallon fleet program. Our current plan for purchasing vehicles in the police department is that we annually purchase 3 to 4 vehicles per year. The vehicles have limited warranties. The cars are replaced about every 3 to 5+ years, depending on their assignment. They have limited resale value at replacement due to their mileage and type. The fleet, many times at the longer age of the fleet, becomes poor quality. We have downtime for repairs. We have high repair maintenance costs. And we have disparate vehicles. In other words, we have some older cars that officers don't care to drive because of their age or mileage, and then, of course, newer cars. And so the plan was to try to address some of those issues. Our current four-year average, in other words, over a four-year period of time, our average annual vehicle budget is $105,266 plus $55,200 in maintenance costs for the fleet, for a purchase plan cost per year on average for 4 years of about $160,466. We're proposing tonight to move to a fleet leasing program, a municipal police fleet leasing program. The program's benefits would be that we would have full factory warranties during the term of the lease. We would have reduced maintenance costs because of the turnover of the vehicles, 2 multi-purpose pool vehicles, and then 2 traffic motorcycles. The car we're looking at for the standard police car is the 2008 Dodge Charger. We're looking at the Charger for a variety of reasons. One is that it is the only police vehicle with its best-in-class rating in 4 key categories. It's also the only police vehicle that currently has standard electronic stability control, which is an important feature for a police vehicle. It also has, and this is a very unique feature that we thought was interesting, it has a multi-displacement system that reduces the fuel use by deactivating 4 of the cylinders of the 8-cylinder car when not needed. So it has a 17 city and a 25 highway mileage rating. And for a police car, that's good. It's equipped with all-speed traction control, another safety feature. And it has some other safety features such as forward-mounted fuel tanks, brake assists, and energy-absorbing steering wheels. One of the things that's also important is the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office annually does a test of police vehicles, and the Charger has come out very high on their tests of police vehicles. So it is the car that many police fleets are moving to, which is a benefit for us. The staff car we're looking at is to, again, stay in the Dodge category, again, to keep all our brand the same, is a smaller car, a 4-door midsize sedan with a 6-cylinder engine that has 19 miles to the gallon and 27 highway. It is the Dodge Avenger, and that would be used for the staff cars, which are the detectives and command staff. The two multi-purpose vehicles we're looking at are the Dodge Dakota pickups. It's a four-door, six-cylinder, two-wheel drive pickup truck. The idea behind the multi-purpose vehicle is currently we utilize old patrol cars as pool vehicles and also have a pickup truck for our evidence and for the range and some other duties such as that. We believe that by going to this multi-purpose vehicle, we can reduce the total number of cars in the fleet and have a vehicle that can be used for officers to use to go to training classes, in other words, the four doors and the five-seat capacity. But also, if we need to use it for evidence pickup or to go to the range, we can utilize the pickup bed also to use the truck for that. So that's the reason we were looking at this as a multi-purpose vehicle. The motorcycles we currently operate are BMW motorcycles, police motorcycles, and we're looking to switch to the Honda motorcycle, as they call the ST-1300P. You'll see that it says on this a 2005, and you'll probably wonder why it says 2005, but we are able to get a special purchase of two demonstrator bikes that have been used to go to police and chiefs conference shows to demonstrate the bikes. Right now, because of the move both in police departments and the general public, quite frankly, to Honda motorcycles, Honda has backed up for almost a year on orders for police motorcycles. And with working with the Honda dealership, we were able to locate two of these demonstrators that only have 3,000 miles on them with full warranty and get them at a significantly reduced price. So we have those two at least on hold at this point. The Honda motorcycle, also the benefit of the Honda motorcycle, many police fleets are moving to that, is less cost as far as repair. Leasing company, the finance company, will be Ford Motor Credit Company. And I know that right off the bat someone thinks, well, you got Dodge cars and you have Ford Motor Credit. But Ford Motor Credit offered us the best deal for financing the vehicles over the 4 years, and you don't have to buy Ford cars to get Ford Motor Credit. They are a finance company. So they actually were able to beat Chrysler's lease rate. It's a 5.4% annual percentage rate for a four-year term. We have 16 quarterly payments of $28,000, and at the end of the lease, this is a municipal lease, so it's not like a traditional consumer lease, you own the car for $1, so you have that asset at the end of the lease. There's no mileage limitations, there's no prepayments, you simply own the car for $1 at the end of the lease. The motorcycles, we're also proposing to lease the motorcycles. The motorcycles are coming from Huntington Beach Honda. They're a leader in developing police motorcycles, and again, they have been able to locate two fully equipped with all the lights and sirens equipment motorcycles, and we're proposing that we finance those through a motorcycle leasing company, which is Sparta Commercial Services out of New York. They do municipal police motorcycle leases. It's a four-year term also, four annual payments, and at the end of the lease, we also own the motorcycles, the asset for $1 at the end of the motorcycle lease. So if we take a look, at our the four-year term, our annual lease payments on 17 vehicles, all the cars, is $112,904. The annual lease payment on the two motorcycles is $11,776. And our estimated maintenance costs now go down to $24,020, our estimated cost. So the lease plan cost per year is $148,700. The average cost of the purchase plan, if you recall, was with maintenance was $160,466. The average lease plan cost is $148,700. Our 2008-2009 budget was $148,700, so we met our goals that we were looking for when we started the project to not be any higher than what our current budget was, but also to improve the fleet. One of the last things I want to talk about a little bit is equipping the vehicles. The motorcycles come fully equipped because they were demonstrator model motorcycles, but the cars will have to be equipped with equipment such as light bars, prisoner seating, sirens, and the like. we have the opportunity to do this and recover some of the cost for that. The equipment for those light bars, prisoner seats, et cetera, is estimated at $33,529. The installation is about $53,808. So the startup cost to equip the cars is about $87,000. The estimated value of our current fleet, the old fleet, to sell is between $85,000 to $96,000. There is a market for used police cars, especially ones that are still in good condition and under about 60,000 miles. So we feel confident that the resale of the fleet will cover the costs of equipping the new fleet. What that will allow us to do is to begin a process where our cars are $1. So you can liquidate your fleet at the end of the lease, and that money can then go to keep the fleet leasing program operating. I've been successful in two other places doing fleet leases, and if your mileage and number of cars work out well, it's an excellent way to run a police fleet. Again, remember, the cars will be all on factory warranty through the entire time of the lease. So we believe the municipal fleet leasing is a very cost-effective and viable program for Arroyo Grande, and I'd be willing to answer any questions that you might have about it.
Okay. Any questions for the chief? Start with you, Joe.
Chief, how many vehicles are we talking about securing at once? 19 vehicles?
We're talking about 16. I'll just make sure I got the right number, including the motorcycles. Yes, that includes the two motorcycles.
And we'd be obtaining them all simultaneously.
We would
fairly close. How would the rotational aspect of that be? It would seem like their 4-year lease would be up in 4 years, and we need to replace the entire fleet then, or do we get into a rotational program where we can start staggering the replacements?
Well, the programs I've worked before that have been successful is you do rotate the fleet at the 4-year mark. Two things come up at that time. First, you own all the fleet for $1, so you have that asset, and what you do is you negotiate your next lease, and you have a time period where you transfer that equipment over a relatively short period of time, so once again you start with a new police fleet. What I've seen in other places that I would anticipate here is the staff vehicles and the pool vehicles will probably not receive the kind of mileage that would result in the need to rotate them out at the end of the 4-year lease. So we would probably want to skip a year, two, or maybe even a term on the staff vehicles. And that would have some then rotation of the lease as it goes through, because the staff vehicles would be held off from being replaced at that 4-year mark.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Couple questions. The charger that we're looking at for the police vehicle, is this a basic vehicle that's been around for several years? You mentioned a lot of fleets are moving to it, and that the L.A. Sheriff's, I think you said, had tested it out well. I guess where I'm going with the question is, well, I don't want us to get into some kind of new technology or something that we now have all these police cars that develop the same chronic problem. It's a 2008, is it a brand-new model year or?
No, the car's been out for, I believe, 3 years now, and it's been very successful in the places where it's been introduced, and probably most importantly, it's been successful enough that the larger fleets, Orange County, Los Angeles County, Alameda County, and others in other larger cities are moving towards the charger. And so that's good for us because we can piggyback on this, and they'll identify some of those problems earlier. They would have identified those earlier than maybe a brand-new model, as you say. We also are comfortable in that we have a full factory bumper-to-bumper warranty on these vehicles, with the exception of wear parts on a police vehicle, which is very good to have. Full oil changes, tires, brake pads, light bulbs, those kind of wear parts. Any of the major repairs or costs, such as obviously drivetrain, transmissions, those kinds of things, are all covered on the warranty. So the maintenance cost we're proposing is just to cover the wear parts on the car, the service.
And then the other question I have is there's kind of two components to this, if I understand it correctly. One is the actual physical leasing with the interest rates and everything else, and then there's the warranty side of it and all the wear parts. And where I'm going with this is, because in the report, there was the 7.9% wasn't called out under the motorcycles. I was actually very surprised that their proposal didn't have to disclose that, whereas the Ford credit did show. And at 7.9, I mean, that's a relatively high interest rate right now, I would think, for a city with stable credit. And so is there any disadvantage for us literally to maybe lend the money out of redevelopment to the city and have the police department or the general fund pay 7.9% to the redevelopment fund? I mean, we have some money sitting around. I mean, I realize it's not a lot of money, but at the same token, I would love to lend the city the $41,000 and get 7.9%. I guess that's my question, is this is a very safe loan. And the 5.4 was down probably around, you know, a reasonable return for a vehicle. But again, the city just, I guess I don't see us as a real risk. And so can anybody answer that one?
Check into it. I'm not sure I have an answer for you on that right now in terms of what kind of terms we'd be able to come up with.
So am I correct then to say that the leasing part does not have to take place through any one of these lending agencies to have the program function correctly? Is that correct?
Right. I think there is the purchase of the cars through McPeak, and the motorcycles through Huntington Beach Honda, and then there's the financing piece, which is the lease. I can speak a little bit to the interest rates. Of course, when you're doing the cars, you have a much larger purchase and a larger number of vehicles, and so we're able to work with Ford to get a lower interest rate based, of course, on the city's good credit, but also the fact that we're having a much larger purchase. On two motorcycles, we're at a little bit different situation there, and I think that's what part of the difference was.
I guess, and this is more statement than comment, I guess if we believe in our solvency to lend ourselves the money at 7.9 would seem to make sense instead of borrowing it. But that'll be in comments then. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Once again, this is not a public hearing. But if there are members of the audience would like to come forward on 11B, this would be an opportunity. Anyone? No one? We'll close any public comment. On 11B, bring this back, and we'll start with Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, actually, I had an extensive conversation with the chief about this yesterday, and I have to admit, in the beginning, looking at the idea that we were going to sell off a fleet that where the majority of the cars had less than 70,000 miles on them and buy all new cars at a time when we're actually in financial difficulty was a pretty big stretch for me. So anyway, I'm real comfortable with the plan as it goes forward. I didn't really think about the lease price there. For that matter, I don't know that we're getting more than 5% on our money sitting in the why not loan the whole deal to ourselves, for that matter? I mean, I think we're getting about 4.5% from the California fund, whatever it is. We might consider that. Anyway, I can support this. I think actually going forward, we do get the one time, if you want to call it a savings in the one time, because we're not going to spend the money in June. We're going to spend it in July. So we get the one-time savings there, and I think overall we'll have a much cleaner operation with the with leasing or at least with rotating the fleet as a whole every 4 years is that will actually be a positive. So I think it's a great way to go. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I can support this. I think we have a great opportunity now piggybacking on to Alameda County's agreement. We've got the residual value of the vehicles that are still below the 60,000-mile ceiling. All the vehicles will be on warranty. It's a proven model. It's not a new technology. It just makes a lot of sense. We're going to be able to be a little bit more economical, and I think we actually may, as time bears out, we may be able to get the fifth year of life out of some of these vehicles, and then we can probably start into a rotational shift where we're not replacing all nine marked vehicles at the same time, and I think it's worthwhile. So I will support this tonight.
Okay, thank you, Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll start off by saying I will definitely support this tonight. I had gotten a call from one of the members of the public who had read the staff report and was concerned when they initially saw the fact that we were reducing from 22 down to 19 vehicles and was questioning the, well, we, of course we can save money if we reduce vehicles, so why lease? And then I talked to the city manager about it, and those three vehicles that we're losing are actually two very old vehicles that are not used a whole lot, have minimal value, and so therefore they're not incurring a whole lot of maintenance costs, and they're also they have very little value. So when that was understood, because I'm back to this whole apples-to-apples comparison thing that we've been doing tonight, I became much more comfortable with it. The only thing that I would add is that I would definitely look at whether I would think we should definitely do the motorcycles internally. Whether we do the whole thing, the only reason we wouldn't maybe want to do that would be the liquidity issue. The motorcycle is such a small amount that I don't see that as an issue at all. But I just have a hard time lending money to someone else when, we can earn a real nice return. The 5.4, again, liquidity and the length of the lease would maybe make me reconsider that one. But I don't think we're going to be seeing 7.9 money in the next 4 years. So those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I'm comfortable with this. It's a process that I'm familiar with, and more agencies are going to this type of a program for all the reasons that you've outlined. So I don't have any real issue with any of it. I think maybe it might be worth
$124,608 as outlined in the report, with the concept that we at least examine alternate financing for the motorcycles.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Discussion? Just hearing none?
Quickly under discussion. Does that give you guys enough direction to either finance it ourselves or based on the motion?
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
If I could, I would like to mention one other thing. Officer Shane Day is in the audience, and I just wanted to recognize him. He's sat here all night, but he also has worked very hard on this police fleet leasing program, and so he saw it through right to the end here, or the beginning. So I wanted to thank him.
Good. Well, we appreciate you being here. No, he had nothing better to do tonight than show up here.
He's a car guy, so this is what he likes.
All right. We'll move to item 12, city council member items. We have none listed this evening. Item 13, city manager items.
No, sir.
Okay. Any council communication?
I have one.
Yeah, I have one as well.
Okay.
I just wanted to thank everyone for the water dance. Steve and I had a chance to attend this last Saturday, and I think it was my fourth or fifth one that I've attended, and it was without a doubt the best one. So I wanted to thank Doug, Carrie, Brenda. I believe it was the Lions who did the barbecue. It was exceptional. It was just a really good night. I don't think anybody left not worn out and without a good time. So I wanted to thank everyone for that.
Okay, good. Do you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to communicate to the council that we did have the at the Ocean Oak Senior Center, we did have that open house. I'd say we probably had about 60 people there,
Good,
really, really, really very good turnout. Got a lot of good direction on what kind of uses we can use up there, we can use that for, and it was real positive. And it turned out really great. Thanks.
Okay. I had one quick announcement. Last Sunday, our America in Bloom judges arrived in the city, and they remained with us until Wednesday morning. And we had what I think was a very good program scheduled for them and conducted for them. And they had very positive comments. And I'd just like to take a moment to thank Bob Lund, specifically Bob Lund, and also Jim Bergman from our staff, and a whole host of volunteers that really came forward and put on a tremendous show for those judges. And it wasn't just the presentation or what we did for them while they were here, but I want to particularly thank all of the Arroyo Grande and Bloom volunteers that have come out this past year and just really worked hard. Their effort has just been tremendous, and it truly does demonstrate the pride that a lot of us feel for this city. So job well done by everyone, and we'll hope for the best in October at the awards ceremony.